Big show for you today. We break down ADPs we can't wait to see develop over the course of this summer. Tara Roberts joins me for this show. We break down several fascinating backfields, including the Dolphins, the Bengals, the Raiders. We also talk through some pass catchers. What are the Chiefs' ADPs? What are they going to settle as? And one wide receiver you might think is boring, but is super critical to track throughout the course of the offseason. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, May 23rd. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Tara Roberts. Tara, what's going on?
I'm doing good. I'm mildly petrified of all these hurt hamstrings in training camp, but outside of that, I'm good.
Listen, it's not the time to focus on hamstrings or anything like that. It's the time to focus, Tara, on complete unbridled optimism. You know, routes on air, that means that the guy is going to be a superstar. You know, you see these clips like Jaden Daniels throwing a dime to Jahan Dotson down the field in tight coverage. That means we're back, baby. Okay, like the Jahan Dotson bros, we're back. All right, so I don't come into this podcast here talking about hamstrings. Like, oh my god, you're making me nervous now.
You're right. I am a Jahan Dotson bro, so I'm staying positive here. I got great news.
Yes. You're in good company then here on this podcast. Well, what we're going to do here today on this show, we are not going to be breaking down every little thing that's happening from mini camps, OTAs, any of that, because that is pretty much nonsense. What we're going to do here, though, in a very serious pursuit, Tara and I are going to go over some ADPs that we can't wait to see play out this summer. We're going to use consensus ADP from Fantasy Pros across multiple best ball platforms as our guide. We just basically, again, there was very little parameters to this show. We just wanted to pull out some players that are currently going at a spot that we think maybe, hey, could they potentially rise from this spot? Are we like raising an eyebrow at where they're going a little too early, a little too late? And because we know this, Tara, as people draft throughout the course of the summer, things are going to change. When we get to training camp, the hype is going to build on some of these players. When we get to the preseason, the hype is going to build on some of these players. And frankly, for some of them too, like some of these running back rooms we're going to talk about, we actually might get some real clarity as to who the lead dog is, who's the secondary player. So this is essentially, we're not necessarily making a stamp on these guys. Like, hey, this is a value. You better draft these players here. It's more of a, I can't wait to see how this develops again throughout the course of the summer. So with that, Tara, why don't you lead us into your first player here, Zamir White, Raiders running back.
Oh, Zamir White. He's so intriguing to me because he's clearly the lead back here. We've got all the signals from Vegas in an offense that should be very balanced. They should have a balanced pass attack and a rush attack because of their quarterback situation. And we know that he's got three down back capabilities. He just feels like one of those players, though, that people are going to kind of hesitate because he's, you know, he's in the RB dead zone. And we've all got that PTSD from some RB dead zone running back from last year, like a Miles Sanders losing his job, Alexander Mattison, who is ironically now the backup for Zamir White. Right. So maybe that's going to make it a little difficult to look at. But that's not going to stop me from dreaming the dream of the RB dead zone running back that actually hits and seeing what kind of value that we can get out of Zamir White. You know, it's important to always be cautious with small sample sizes because that's what we have for Zamir White. Last year, we have a very small sample size. And when you're carrying that over an entire season, sometimes things just don't exactly translate. Again, we saw that with Alexander Mattison, who had looked fantastic in his little backup role before behind Dalvin Cook. And then all of a sudden, you put him into a full-time role and it just did not click. But looking at that small sample size for Zamir White, in 2023, Josh Jacobs suffered that injury at the end of the season and missed the final four games of the season. And White stepped in and he was the lead back. And over those four little games, he was the RB12 in average points per game in PPR with two games over 100 rushing yards. Not bad considering the team situation. And over that time period, White had the most attempts, third most in yards of any running back over that stretch. So that's fantastic news, what he was able to do with the Raiders when they were technically struggling. And this should be an improved year. I know we've got a shaky quarterback situation. We don't know who's starting, but they'll have a full offseason under Antonio Pierce. So things can turn around here. And when we're looking at the Raiders as a whole, there's a lot of positives to look at them. I know it's a weird situation with the Raiders, but there are positives to look at. The Raiders' defense was actually not that bad last year. They allowed the 10th fewest points last year to opponents. So their games were, you know, fairly competitive aside from one or two there. And White shouldn't really be scripted out of games. And with a strong receiving core, again, we're not going to see defenses really focus in and say, hey, we got to stop this run and let Devontae Adams and Jacoby Myers and Brock Bowers run free. So that's the positive that, you know, the setup is looking pretty nice for Zamir White. When you're looking at that Raiders backfield, it just screams that Zamir White is the guy that you got to trust. You got Amir Abdullah re-signed, who's never been a significant contributor. We talked about Alexander Mattison, who has proven that he's more of a backup kind of guy. Then they drafted Dylan Lobb, which, you know, shouldn't really be more of a change of pace back here. So when I'm looking at Zamir White, and as we start to kind of get comfortable throughout the offseason with him as the RB1 for the Raiders, it's going to be fun to see where that ADP takes him. Is he going to stay in that RB dead zone? Is he going to rise up a little bit? Is he going to, you know, get a little bit of hype? It's going to be fun to watch.
Super fun to watch and to see where he ends up kind of going when all is said and done, when drafts start really kicking off in August. You made so many really interesting points there, to some threads to pull on. But I will say, like, it's funny you bring this player up first, Zamir White, because everything with the Raiders right now, I just kind of look at them and I'm like, what are you? Like, what are you trying to be? Where are you from, like, a team building perspective? Like, this team has Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell, like, competing to be their starting quarterback. Like, that alone is just like, the sex appeal is not there. You know, it's just, it's not very exciting. But I really like Antonio Pierce, what he brought to the table. I'm obviously, like, Devontae Adams is on this roster, you know, and they spend big on Christian Wilkins. They're spending big on Max Crosby. Like, those three guys alone make me think, like, yeah, this team could be interesting. This team could maybe make some noise and be a little frisky, but then it's the quarterback situation. It's Tom Telesco as the GM. It's like Brock Bowers gets added to the mix. Again, I just have so many questions about the Raiders, but overall, I do think that you make really strong points about the defense being the type of unit that can keep them competitive in games. The Devontae Adams factor there too. Like, that was one of the biggest catalysts for Josh Jacobs' 2022 season, was that he ran into a historic low amount of like light boxes. He ran into a crazy amount of light boxes because teams are still accounting for Devontae Adams. Now they have all these other passing game assets to account for. You imagine that pretty low on their priority list is like, yeah, we're loading up here to stop Zamir White. So he is squarely in the running back dead zone, right? RB24. 83rd player off the board in early best ball drafts. We're going to do an episode, Tara, in our listeners of the podcast, remember the series from last year called Flip the Script, where we try to identify like this year's whatever. We're going to try to do like this year's Rashad White, aka the king of the running back dead zone. Like, who could rise above the running back dead zone despite carrying all of the like concerns about a dead zone running back? And by the way, like, Rashad White averaged 3.6 yards per carry last year. The Bucks run game was actually pretty bad, but he was the seventh highest scoring running back in fantasy. And like, when I just look through the group of quote dead zone backs right now, I do think that Zamir White, like, to spoiler alert that episode, like, I think he's gonna have a really strong case to be kind of this year's Rashad White.
Completely agree.
All right, let's move on to my first one here, who actually I kind of think is going in the same range and might also have a case to be this year's Rashad White if we consider this the dead zone. Jaylen Warren, running back 28, 88th overall. The reason I want to highlight this one, Tara, is because I've been in some early drafts, you know, like with fantasy cares, like the Eliminators and Scott Fishbowl and some best ball stuff like that. I am actually kind of surprised that Jaylen Warren goes this low. I don't know if you feel the same way, but, you know, he, again, 28th running back off the board. He's always kind of there in a range where I'm like, you know what, if I need a third running back, or shoot, I've even waited at the position and I'm kind of taking my second guy, I find myself gravitated to Jaylen Warren here. Because number one, I think he's very, very good. I think the Steelers are going to be a really strong rushing attack this year. I know we have questions about the offensive ecosystem overall, but I do have some faith in the run game. And my biggest thing here is like, Tara, am I wrong in thinking that we could be halfway through training camp and these Steelers running back ADPs have flipped, where Najee Harris is running back 21, 76th player off the board? And again, I think like by the end of training camp, we could see these two Steelers running backs flip. And I'm like, am I wrong in thinking that might actually be the correct idea?
No, I don't think so. Because I think, you know, well, contract year now for Najee Harris. So he's got some extra incentive there. But I think we know what Najee is, right? We know exactly mm-hmm. what he is and what to expect of him out of this offense, regardless of what kind of volume that he gets. But there's the allure of what happens if Jaylen Warren gets that extra volume. So if we start to see that this is, you know, again, you know, it's going to be a committee. And we know it's going to be a run-heavy offense, even though technically we've got the changes at quarterback, they're still going to be run-heavy. So yeah, I think as we continue through this offseason, there's a strong possibility that they start to get very, very close and then maybe flip a little because the upside is there with Warren and the stability is there with Najee. And when you're drafting in that technical, you know, RB dead zone, you want to go with the one that has the higher upside. So it makes sense that that could happen.
Yeah, the fact that he's obviously going to be sharing a backfield with a guy in Najee Harris who, like, I don't think Najee Harris is bad. I think Najee Harris is, like, a quality back, and I actually think that he's been better when kind of some of this workload has been taken away from him and has been put on Jaylen Warren. I think he looked a lot more inefficient early on in his career because he was getting loaded up with all these touches and some inefficient touches that were going to lend itself to inefficiency overall, especially just some of these short little stupid dump off passes that was kind of the staple of the Matt Canada offense. But like that alone makes it kind of tough when we're projecting Jaylen Warren out. But let me ask you this, Tara. What's the ceiling on a player like Jaylen Warren? Because from a fantasy perspective, because like if you just look at where he finished last year, he was the 25th highest scoring running back last year. He's going off the board as the 28th. So I think you could actually argue that if the offense is going to be better this year, they're going to run the ball better. You could actually argue that I think he's going a little lower than what his theoretical floor is if he stays healthy. But what's the ceiling on a player like this?
Maybe we look at it from the context of looking back at Arthur Smith and saying, you know, maybe the ceiling for Jaylen Warren, ironically, now Cordarrelle Patterson is on the team. Maybe the ceiling for him is kind of having that Cordarrelle Patterson kind of season that Cordarrelle had under Arthur Smith. Hopefully we don't get a whole bunch of Cordarrelle Patterson carries that throw a wrench into everything here. But I think maybe that's what we can look at as the best case scenario for him.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Okay, let's move to your next backfield, which is another committee in the AFC North. You want to talk about Zach Moss going off the board as a 29th running back, 96th overall player, and Chase Brown, running back 37, 121st overall. I'm with you. I find this backfield extremely fascinating.
I feel like this is a very similar concept to what you were talking about with the Pittsburgh backfield, but the caveat that we have seen higher upside very recently from Zach Moss than Najee Harris had. But maybe we kind of look at it in that way, that Zach Moss is the Najee Harris of this backfield and Chase Brown is the Jaylen Warren of this backfield. So we're looking at another committee backfield, ADPs, fairly similar guys that are going as, you know, RB3s in our drafts. And when we're looking at this and how ambiguous it can be, I can't help but like lean in and kind of want to see how these ADPs play out. Because as we get the rumors of how the carries are going to split, as we get the, you know, details of who's going to be involved in what specific role, we can start to look at maybe who's going to be the better value in this offense if we know that it's going to be a true committee backfield. Because the good thing about this situation is that unlike Pittsburgh, there's a lot of variables that are changing, right? We've got changes in quarterbacks, we've got changes in offensive coordinators, but in Cincinnati, we know exactly what this offense plans to do, right? Everything is staying the same. We've got the same quarterback situation. We've got the same receivers as of right now. We've got a known in terms of how this offense wants to function. And so we can look at Joe Mixon's workload over the past several years, and we know that this is a situation where we can produce a top 10 back if someone does in fact take over as that RB1. And even in a split backfield, maybe they can both be productive because of the opportunities in terms of passing, reception opportunities, goal line opportunities are strong. We can look at all those things that kept Joe Mixon very relevant as a fringe RB1 top 10 option, and then apply that to Zach Moss and Chase Brown and try to figure out how all that's going to work. Because I really do like Chase Brown in this backfield. And it's so tough for me to not lean into him because we just saw what Zach Moss can do when given the opportunity to be a lead back when Jonathan Taylor is out. But Chase Brown is someone who I don't think that we should underestimate in this circumstance, because if he happens to be the person that is the 1B and kind of has that passing upside, I feel like that's where the true value lies in this offense for Cincinnati. Joe Mixon was making a lot of his bread and butter off of those receptions. You know, the yardage was fantastic. Goal line opportunities were good, but really the receptions were what were really keeping him just kind of pumping consistently, gave him a nice floor and some good upside there. So if Chase Brown is the guy that is taking over the majority of those receptions, that's the direction that I want to lean in, especially if that value for him is a lot lower in terms of ADP.
This backfield, kind of unlike the Steelers backfield, I think you're going to have to take a stand. Like at this moment, I think you have to take a stand as to which guy you think is going to win that job. And it sounds like you're at least leaning towards kind of thinking Chase Brown could maybe take the lead role here, because like with the Steelers, we can project them to be one of, if not the most run heavy teams in the league. We know what they are going to want to do. The Bengals are not going to play that way necessarily. They're going to obviously lean into Joe Burrow. We'll see what he looks like coming off of injury, like how healthy he is, if he can be that same player again. I sure hope he can be, right? I mean, he's one of the most fun quarterbacks to watch in the NFL when he's operating at his highest capabilities. So I think, though, because of that, I don't necessarily know that this is a backfield where both of these guys are going to give us consistent, productive weeks, right? So that's why I think this backfield's interesting to highlight, is that I think by training camp, we're going to be able to read those reports of like, oh, Zach Moss is getting X amount of snaps with the first team. Chase Brown is, you know, just mixing in on third downs, or maybe the other way around. Because, Tara, I'll proposition you this, where I think you're right to highlight that Chase Brown looks like he could potentially be that receiving back. Like, he made some interesting plays as a receiver, as a rookie. The thing I also can't get out of my head, though, and why I think this is a tough committee to crack, is that Zach Moss was pretty good as like an outlet receiver for the damn Colts last year, and was really in terms of Pro Football Focus grades, was a highly graded pass protector, where that has always been an issue with Mixon, which is why we want to kind of have a stance on this backfield. I also think, Tara, and you can tell me if you disagree with this, that we might get like halfway through training camp or halfway through preseason and be like, we have as much clues then as we do here on May 23rd.
Yeah, I agree. That's going to be interesting to watch, because we really have to really try and find the context in there to figure out exactly how this backfield is going to go. Because the contract for Zach Moss wasn't exactly a RB1 commitment. And we know that they do like Chase Brown, so there's a lot of ambiguity in this offense and trying to figure out exactly where this one is going to head. And you're right, we could, you know, 2 months from now be in a very similar situation where we're not entirely sure which one of these guys is going to be the one that hits.
Yeah, we want to lean into ambiguous backfields, of course, in fantasy, because that's where the upside comes from. I just think this one could be ultra ambiguous, which makes it very fascinating, but could also lead to some serious profit. Okay, my next one here that I want to highlight, just an entire backfield. I want to talk about the Miami Dolphins running backs, because I'm a little confused at the current ADP of the Miami Dolphins running back, Tara. And I'm hoping you can maybe point me in a direction here and like help me make sense of this. Devon Achane is going off the board as the running back 8. 19th overall player, so like a square second round pick in early best ball drafts, which is aggressive. Raheem Mostert, who you might remember was one of the best running backs in fantasy last year, in fact the running back 2 overall in Yahoo standard scoring, he's going off the board as the running back 27, 86th overall player. And then somehow this makes no sense to me. Like, let me tell you what, if Devon Achane is going to be a top 10 running back and Raheem Mostert is still going to be a top 30 running back, like both these guys are viable, how do we also expect Jalen Wright, Miami Dolphins rookie running back, fourth round pick that they traded up for? I get it, they're aggressive for the guy. He's the 42nd running back off the board, 139th overall player. So Tara, help, the math is not mathing for me on these players. And I get that we don't just draft off of projections, right? Because there's no way you can project that out. That would make no sense in fantasy, especially in a best ball format. You're hoping for that upside, etc. But again, make this make sense for me. How does this work out?
So I think I can work this one out here. So A-Chan's okay, ADP.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, yes, because I have thought about it a lot. Because I do think that I like Jalen Wright. Now, at his ADP, is like, this is odd, right? And I feel like maybe that this is kind of a best ball thing. And once we get into redraft, we'll feel a little bit more comfortable and that ADP will be very different. But
yeah, rookie people, we are high on, well, high as a kite on rookie fever right now. That's for sure.
Yes. So I feel like it's going to settle back a little bit and make him an actual, you know, decent value pick. But I think A-Chan's ADP is the real problem with him. I have been struggling to get there as I am doing early drafts. It's so high considering that we know that Raheem Mostert is going to be significantly involved, provided that he is healthy. And when you look at the two running backs and you're saying that, you know, well, health and age is a concern. I get it. You know, age is a concern, but health is a concern for both of them, right? You know, A-Chan dealt with multiple injuries last year. So it's not as if he has a clean bill of health. So from my perspective, I feel like when we're looking at this, A-Chan's ADP is the one that's kind of shaky to me in terms of how high it is, because the value pick here is definitely Raheem Mostert. They'll both pay off if everything goes exactly as planned and they can, you know, produce two top 10 backs easily in that offense just because of the sheer volume, the upside of the offense, the goal line opportunities that they have, the wide open lanes for them to just run through to the point where HN can average 8 yards per carry and Raheem Mostert's yards per carry was ridiculous as well. So I get it. They both have the potential, if everything goes right, to average out as top 10 backs. So when you're looking at that with A-Chan, it makes sense because the ceiling is so high. But his is the ADP that just, I feel like it just needs to come down a little bit because we might be overshooting there. Because Raheem Mostert is still going to be an important part of this offense. They're going to run a committee. We know that this is not going to suddenly transition to Devin A-Chan's backfield. He will not be the sole lead back and Raheem Mostert a backup, and it's just not going to function that way. So I like Raheem Mostert's ADP. I don't think that it's going to rise. It's probably something that I'll continue to lean in and be a little bit wary of A-Chan because we're probably drafting A-Chan more closer to his ceiling, and Raheem Mostert is more of a floor situation and a value pick where we're getting him. Jalen Wright is interesting, though, because I feel like when you're looking at this initially and you're saying, are we really that interested in RB3 and an offense? When we're looking at Miami's offense, we have to consider that the RB3 in Miami's offense is really technically the RB2 anywhere else. He's more of a backup role, technically, when you're looking at it, because we know that if one of A-Chan or Mostert goes down, that if Jalen Wright is that true third option, he will ascend into that shared committee role with top five upside. So I get it. I do like Jalen Wright. I need the ADP to come down a little bit. Raheem Mostert is the good value here. And A-Chan is the one that is the bit of a head scratcher because it's very risky and he's being drafted close, very close to his ceiling with a lot of potential for things to go wrong.
Yeah, I think you actually made a really good point about the Jalen Wright thing there. Cause like, I look at the other guys that he's being drafted around, like it is high, like running back 42. I'm just like, this is the third guy on the team. What are we doing here? But like Chuba Hubbard, Ezekiel Elliott, Ty Chandler, like who's going to change your fantasy season? Like probably none of those three guys I just mentioned. And like, if there is an injury, Jalen Wright would be that candidate. The thing is, though, I think running back 42, and also with like the only way that this makes sense to me with Mostert as 27, as Jalen Wright at 42, like I think you're almost baking in that an injury is going to happen with Raheem Mostert, which like based on history outside of last year, that's actually a pretty good bet, right? And he obviously did miss a game or two last year as well. I think it was just one game, but you know. So that's certainly possible, right? The A-Chan thing is interesting because, like you, Tara said, 8 yards per carry. I mean, she's not really exaggerating much here. He averaged 7.8 yards per carry last year, which is absolutely bonkers. And on this specific offense, like we could sit here and say, like, well, if Devon A-Chan was playing on any other offense, he wouldn't do that. Well, who cares? He's playing on this offense. This is the team he plays on. And I think he's still very well set up to do that. And, you know, and from a per game basis, he was the fourth highest scoring running back last year in fantasy on a per game basis. That per game is doing a lot of heavy lifting there because we know he did miss time with injuries. So I'm going to, just because we're talking to Achan here, and I think we've got a good sense of the Mostert and Wright thing, we're going to play my favorite game here, Tara, which is this guy or that guy. Because you said, like, Achan's a little aggressive. So let me pitch it to you this way. These are the guys going right after Achan. Would you rather have Achan or Josh Jacobs?
Why start off with that one?
Because it's a this is notoriously a difficult game.
People are going to hate my answer on this one because I think everyone's prepared for Josh Jacobs to fall off, but I think he's going to rebound from last year, and I would take Josh Jacobs. Yeah.
Okay. All right. How about Travis Etienne or Devon Achane?
Etienne.
Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I would take Derrick Henry. Yeah.
Yeah, same. That was the first one I didn't really think about. I think I'd rather have Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Definitely, if you can bet on a 30-plus-year-old running back who's had a ton of carries versus a second-year guy who averages 7.8 yards per carry, you do it every single time. But I'm doing it. Rashad White, James Cook, Isaiah Pacheco. Any of those guys would you rather have than Devon Achane, or is that kind of the cutoff?
I think that's kind of the cutoff, because at that point, you're looking at guys that, you know, we've got potentially a change in offensive system for Rashad White here that might knock his value down a little bit. Achane, or Pacheco, we know what his ceiling is. So I think I would kind of, that's the cutoff for me, where I'd start to lean in and say I'm comfortable with taking Achane.
I think that's right. It's just difficult because he's just like not a normal running back, right? All these guys we talked about are going at least 10 spots overall lower than Devon Achane. And again, when you just sit down and do like touch projections, you're going to have a much higher touch count if all these guys stay healthy for 17 games on ETN, on Jacobs, on certainly Henry and Rashad White. It's just like Achane is in such a unique situation. So this is freaking May 23rd, Tara. We are writing takes in pen. In pencil. We are writing takes in pencil here. We can erase, we can, you know, scratch out whatever in a few weeks. So I don't really know how I feel about this Miami backfield. The only thing that I think is like, there's just no, like the math does not math here on this one, but it's a unique backfield, and that's why we do not draft off our projections. All right, final running back we're going to hit on. This is your suggestion here. Tajay Spears, running back 35, 110th overall. I feel like this guy went from Tara, like someone that everybody expected to be super high on and be really aggressive drafting, and then the Tony Pollard thing happens, and it feels like nobody talks about Tajay Spears anymore. So what are your thoughts on the Tennessee Titans running back?
Yes, I did not like this signing. I thought that they could have, you know, continued forward with Tajay Spears as the RB1, and it's a weird pairing for me just because the profiles for Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard are very similar, but I think maybe that might end up working in Tajay Spears' favor. This will sound ugly, but this year's upgraded version of Chuba Hubbard that is actually, you know, has like a ceiling and is explosive could be Tajay Spears, a guy who like that, fits that narrative of, you know, he's the incumbent running back, right? And then the team signs a new running back, brings somebody in for that RB1 role, but he ends up, you know, beating him out, just straight up being the better back and just pushing him to the backside and taking over as the RB1. And I can see that happening for Tajay Spears, because when we look at Tony Pollard last year, we can say like, hey, you know, man, there was an issue in terms of him recovering from that ankle injury. Maybe he didn't feel right. Maybe it just is going to take him some time to get back to that Tony Pollard that we saw before. And that's a potential. But, you know, objectively looking at the stats from last year, his overall finish of RB14 in PPR was very misleading. He averaged just 13.1 fantasy points per game. And it was a very flat fantasy points. He exceeded 15 fantasy points only twice the entire season. When you think about it that way, it was just ugly and frustrating after those first two games where he had strong performances. And then after that, it was just like you just felt awful having Tony Pollard in your lineup. He struggled immensely at the goal line comparatively to all his other peers with similar carries inside the 20, the 10, and the 5, he was just wildly, wildly underperformed comparatively to all other running backs, to where you can factually say that he absolutely struggled at the goal line. The opportunities were there. He was in a strong offense. Opportunities at the goal line were just flowing from the Cowboys, right? The touchdown should have been there, and Tony Pollard just straight up couldn't produce. So when we're looking at this and the fact that they have similar skill sets, right, and they both have that receiving upside, they're both supposed to be that explosive back. They both can be early down backs. They can technically both be three down backs as a whole. This backfield is probably going to operate as a 1A, 1B situation, and the best man is going to end up just straight up earning the stronger workload here. Now, just when you look at his statistics for Tajay Spears, from the receptions, everything was, he had one of PFF's top 10 explosive or elusive ratings. It just was fantastic in terms of what you saw on the field and what you were able to look at on paper as well. So if he continues that, I expect that he will outshine Pollard and earn the RB1 role in this backfield.
I freaking love the Miles Sanders, Chuba Hubbard, like kind of a comparison there, because when you first say Chuba Hubbard, I feel like I'm super mean to Chuba Hubbard on the show. I just think he's like the definition of a replacement level running back, can give you just acceptable running back play, but you just want a lot more than that. Tajay Spears, I think, could be a lot better than that, and that's what makes me interested in this comparison here, because I think what we need, for Tajay Spears to pay off, I think probably the most likely scenario, like the most likely universe, is that both these running backs are frustrating, right? And like they're both kind of playing, they're both sort of mixing in. I could even say that like maybe Tajay Spears is the Tony Pollard to Tony Pollard Ezekiel Elliott back in the Dallas days, right? And like we're all sitting there saying like, ah, oh, man, like Spears needs more carries. Spears needs more carries, but maybe there's a reason he's not getting more carries. We know the whole story with the former Dallas backfield, but I think for Spears to play off, we kind of need Pollard to fail. Hence the Miles Sanders example there. And like, look, I really like Tony Pollard. I think he's been a very good player in the NFL for a long time. But at the Super Bowl, he told me I didn't feel like myself until like week 11. That's when I felt more like old Tony Pollard. And like, it's worth noting that he averaged 5.1 yards per carry in week 11. He scored a touchdown. He caught four of five targets that game. But you look at the rest of his game log, Taryn, it's like there's a lot of bad games even after week 11, or at least inefficient rushing games after week 11. Like, we got a 3.7 yards per carry against the Eagles. We got 3.4 yards per carry against the Seahawks. We got 3.2 yards per carry against the Dolphins, 3.1 against the Lions. And like, if you're watching those games, a lot of those were just frustrating Tony Pollard performances. And you're right. Like, yeah, his end of season numbers look good. That's why end of season running back numbers can be misleading, like you said, because like, tell me the one time you liked having Tony Pollard on your fantasy team, a guy you drafted in the second round last year. Tell me the one time you liked it. Maybe week one when he scored two touchdowns. And even then, it wasn't the most beautiful performance. That was such a weird outlier game script. So I love that that sort of example there that you painted with Miles Sanders and Chuba Hubbard. So Tajay Spears definitely is a guy that, I don't know, Tara, do you think he might be somebody like we draft and then we need to be a little patient with? Or is there a chance he could come out early and just win the job in training camp?
I think it's a draft and be patient with. I do think that we get a 1A, 1B situation, but I don't see any reason unless in training camp, it's really tough for a running back to look terrible, right? So Tony Pollard is not going to get out there and just look sluggish and slow and ineffective, right? He's going to be fine. He's going to earn that RB1 role. That's what they signed him for, to be the lead back there. And we're going to have to draft, wait till they actually get in season and wait for Tony or for Tajay Spears to actually outshine him. But I do think it's going to happen.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to transition from running backs to pass catcher ADPs that we can't wait to see play out this summer right after this. All right, we're back. And first receiver ADP we're going to highlight here, Tara, this one I brought to the table. Jameson Williams, Lions wide receiver, going off the board, wide receiver 48, 111th overall player. Tara, I almost guarantee that this one gets steamed up, okay? My guess is he's going over a lot of players that are currently, going ahead of him in early best ball drafts, right? Like, we got Cortland Sutton. We got some, like, rookie receivers. Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, Ladd McConkey. You know, we got some second-year guys, some third-year guys, Christian Watson, JSN. You know, Deontay Johnson's going ahead of him, Jordan Addison. Like, I could see Jameson Williams really leaping up the board in training camp just because the team's talking positively about him. I feel like there's a lot of folks that really want Jameson Williams to be a thing. I have said this where I am not ready to deliver my sort of final take on Jameson Williams yet. I gotta finish some of the reception perception stuff. I have a few more games to log, stuff like that. Let me just ask you, what do you think about Jameson Williams? Because I find myself being able to talk myself into multiple different directions before I even consider how good the player is, which I think is an open question, by the way. I think is an open question just how good he is. What is his true ceiling at the NFL level? So, again, what are your thoughts about Jameson Williams? Do you agree that he's a guy that could end up getting steamed up? And like, how high is too high?
Oh, that's a two-part question. I made my stance. I'm not going to lie. I'm labeling myself a Jameson Williams truther here, and all right. I'm 100% in on his upside as a potential top 24 wide receiver this year. So I'm,
ooh,
yeah, I'm okay. Very in. I'm very in. Very in. But I don't know if his ADP is going to get steamed up a lot because I don't know if it's maybe one of those know your league mates situations, because I feel like he's a very polarizing one where half the people are all in, ready to, this is Jameson Williams. We saw him in college. We know what he can be. We want to get out there and just, we want to see him just, you know, streaking down the field, deep threats, and actually earning more targets too. But at the same time, I feel like there's a lot of people that kind of take that approach of, well, what can he, because I've gotten that, you know, combative, like, hey, you know, there's Amon-Ra, there is Sam Laporta, there's Jahmyr Gibbs. What can Jameson Williams really be in this offense? So I feel like, I don't know if it's going to get steamed up too much, but you got to know your league mates to know if there's going to be someone in there that will really take that 2, maybe 3 round leap on his ADP and just jump ahead. Because when I look at him, I love him. I love the potential there. And I like to make the comparison to that of a Kadarius Toney situation where the team wanted to will him to success. But when you look at him on the field, you see all the mistakes, you see all the issues, and they're pushing him forward. But it just doesn't seem like he has the upside and true potential to carry it out. But when you see Jameson Williams on that limited sample size, looks impressive. You don't see any issues catching balls, no mistakes, no hand issues, no route issues. So from that perspective, it's just a matter of getting the volume to him. And if Detroit's willing to commit to it, I feel like the upside is there.
Yeah, I'm with you that it is definitely a league, like, know your league mate situation. Cause like, there are some people that are just like sick of Jameson Williams. They're sick of hearing, which I'm like, dude, like if you're sick of hearing about a third year receiver who's barely played, like, log off, like get off Twitter and like stop listening. Don't stop listening to this podcast. Listen to this podcast for sure. But like, stop listening to so many podcasts. If you think like, wow, God, we're just talking about Jameson Williams so much. Like, you need to stop consuming. So like, put the phone down, go outside, take a walk. Okay. Get some sun. Okay. Get a tan. It's summer. Weather's nice. No excuses. You shouldn't be sick of Jameson Williams here in May. Give me a break. But there are people that feel that way. So, and I think those people will not be interested in drafting Jameson Williams at like a higher rate than where he's going at wide receiver 48. Because like for me, I do share some of those concerns about Jameson Williams that people mentioned to you, where like, he's never going to be more important than, at least I think he's never going to be more important than like the fifth most important player on this offense, right? Where even from a target tree perspective, like the run game is going to be more important than Jameson Williams. Now, can he absolutely make your week on a couple of touches? 100%. Because we know that he has that game breaking ability. We've seen that even materialize in a couple of brief moments in the NFL. I do have questions though about the consistency of the player, about his route running, about some of this. Like, sometimes he just looks like he's lost out there in some of these games. But also, I can kind of get that because he's barely played. You know, some of that is not his own fault. Some of that is his fault with the gambling suspension and everything. So, and injuries, of course, like that just happens to players. So that's why I kind of think that, like, I want to do some work on some of those later season games. I do need to go back and review those and chart those routes. I think that's going to be critical in discerning who he is. Cause like, just watching him at some point in the middle of the season, I'm like, man, this guy like is still so far away from being a regular contributor to the offense. But again, to the plus side of it, it does sound like at least by not just words, but also actions, the team is counting on him to be more than whatever I just outlined there.
I will say one of the things that it kind of encourages me is that I feel like sometimes we underestimate just how much Josh Reynolds actually contribute to that offense.
Yeah.
Was it super usable for us? Only occasionally, right? In deep leagues. But if you look at that and you say, okay, I can maybe make the numbers work of like, okay, Josh Reynolds, take that away, those touchdowns that he had, you know, mix it in with Jameson Williams. So it really is just a matter of if the team, I think, is truly willing to commit to him as that true wide receiver too. You know, obviously not that, you know, super upside of potentially being a wide receiver one, that just can't happen. But there's also the good news that Jared Goff has a lot of, you know, nice setup in terms of dome games and schedule here. So maybe he can benefit off of that.
No, that's a good point. Like, if the player is capable, like if the team is committed to him and the player is capable of him taking some of that Josh Reynolds work, like that is a player they did not replace in the offense. Like, it ain't gonna be DPJ or any of these guys taking on the Josh Reynolds role. So very interesting. I think I do predict that Jameson Williams is probably going to rise a little bit here. And I think he's going to be a very discussed player this summer. So if you're already sick of Jameson Williams, take about a two week break consuming fantasy content. Still stay subscribed to this podcast and give us a downloads, you know, all that stuff, but just take like 2 weeks off. You'll feel better when you come back in June. That's totally okay. I endorse that. Okay, Christian Kirk, next guy you want to talk about here, wide receiver 31, 59th player overall. I was surprised, honestly, to see Christian Kirk on this list. So tell me your thoughts on Kirk.
Concept here with Christian Kirk and why I'm excited for his ADP is that I just think it's going to go down. Right? I think it's going to go down, okay, and we're going to get higher value. I don't think this is a situation where we're going to see him ebb and flow upwards and hype around it. I think we're going to get the Brian Thomas hype, and that Brian Thomas hype is going to push that value down for Christian Kirk. And he's going to be a guy that we can grab in mid rounds and feel super good about because of his potential to actually be the wide receiver one on his team. As well, you know, Brian Thomas, whether or not you believe in him or not in his capabilities, when you look at him, you can say, okay, this is the guy that they intend to be the one-for-one replacement of Calvin Ridley. So we know exactly what we can hopefully expect of him because we got the same offensive situation. Hopefully, maybe a leap for Trevor Lawrence. I don't know if that were to happen. That would obviously favor both the wide receivers here. But when we're looking at what Calvin Ridley did, and compare that to Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk, outside of that one random awful week one where he just didn't produce and something weird was going on there, he was the most consistent receiver in that receiving core throughout the entire season. So he may not have that massive big play upside that Brian Thomas could have in that offense, but I think the guy that you're going to want in your fantasy lineup on a week-to-week basis and the value that he's going to bring is a potential top 24 running wide receiver that you can get at a very depressed ADP cost is going to be immense there. So he's a guy that you can just draft, good value, rely on, know that when you plug him into your lineup, you can get a wide receiver too and feel super comfortable about it. And I think that when we're watching this ADP and we look for all this hype around everyone else, maybe even we'll get some Gabe Davis hype that helps push it down a little bit more.
Oh boy.
And we get this nice value, right? it'll help us out with Christian Kirk to be the nice value pick for us. So it's a kind of a weird one. I'm excited because I don't think it's going up. I think it's going down, and we can get a nice value pick for him as a solid wide receiver too.
That's why I was so fascinated that you had him on this list, because it's like, yeah, it seems kind of boring, right? Like Christian Kirk, like what do you want to talk about Christian Kirk here, you know, in the middle of May? But that's exactly why it's an interesting ADP to track, because he could give you, like, Christian Kirk might end up being like kind of the new version of Tyler Lockett, right? Where I think Lockett at his peak is a much better player than Christian Kirk at his peak. Let me just say that. But I think from like a fantasy perspective, he's always going to project better than where he's drafted. And he's just, because again, he's just kind of boring. Like, we know what we're getting. He plays in that vertical slot role, but also he can give you some layups. Like, that's really why the Jags signed Christian Kirk to begin with, because they needed to give Trevor Lawrence someone that was going to provide layups in the wide receiver room. Kirk has done that. You know, over 700 yards, 3 touchdowns, 57 catches in 12 games last year. He was pacing really well prior to that injury late in the year. And there's really no reason to think like he can't, he's gonna, you know, he'll be fine coming back and everything like that. So I agree with you. Like, he is someone that is probably not going to get any of this like hype bunny stuff in the offseason. Like, I think several of the players going behind him, Rashee Rice notwithstanding, because, you know, weird situation. But Terry McLaurin, Jaden Reed, I mean, Calvin Ridley, we're already getting the clips from Calvin Ridley again from OTA. Like, look how fast this guy is. You know, some of these other Chiefs receivers. I could easily see Christian Kirk getting jumped by several players here. So very fascinating one to talk about. I agree with you. He's going to be interesting. I'll throw out a receiver here. Zay Flowers, wide receiver 26, 47th overall. He is one that I can definitely see rising throughout the course of the process, because like, if you're just telling me without like saying the player, right? Like who the player is, anything like that, or any, just no names on the back of the jersey. You're telling me that I can get the reigning MVP's number one wide receiver as the 26th wide receiver off the board. I think that's kind of a value, especially when you look at just like, again, how good Zay Flowers is. Now, again, you put some of the names on the back of the jersey here. We understand it's Lamar Jackson. It's the Ravens. They're never going to lead the league in pass attempts. That's not going to happen. Mark, I also said number one wide receiver because like Mark Andrews is probably still, I would imagine, the number one target on the team. Although I'm not going to write that in pen, just because like typically if a wide receiver takes that big step forward and jumps into the superstar tier, they can pass up that number one tight end. And then you look at Zay Flowers, though, like how he lines up with Lamar Jackson. I think this is super important. I tweeted about this morning. Most crucial mark in Zay Flowers' rookie year reception perception profile, 85% success rate versus zone coverage. That falls at the 90th percentile in reception perception history. It would have ranked fourth if it was among the players charted in 2020. Zay Flowers, damn good at beating zone coverage. Lamar Jackson going to face a lot of zone coverage every year because teams are terrified of turning their back to him and playing man coverage. There are some issues kind of that Zay Flowers needs to work through against man coverage, but he's solid against man coverage. So I think the key here, Tara, is like, I think Zay Flowers is good. I think we all agree Zay Flowers is good, but how high can he fly? Like how good of a player can he be? Can he reach that superstar tier? And I think that's going to be fascinating to see him, like where he ends up going from an ADP perspective, because I just look at some of the guys going ahead of him and I can easily tell myself a story of how Zay Flowers outproduces them.
I agree. I can see him moving up, and I think he deserves to move up. I mean, when we're looking at him as a rookie, you can look at the overall season, but with rookies, I like to look at the back half of the season and see how they developed over the course. And Zay Flowers really came on as the season started to progress. He started to, you know, finally become someone that they could rely on. You know, early on, he wasn't getting a ton of touchdown opportunities, but he started to get more red zone opportunities. He was getting targets as well. So he was starting to get his, regardless of how the game was going and the flow of the game and the pass volume that was there. And I think that's what we need to see out of him. You know, we know that targets are probably going to lean favorably towards him compared to a guy like Rashad Bateman. You know, him getting re-signed probably favored Zay Flowers in terms of keeping that offense secure as it is and letting Zay Flowers have that wide receiver one role where he is receiving the most volume. You know, again, Mark Andrews being the factor there in terms of targets. But seeing him finish off so strongly with the touchdowns as well was what really encouraged me, and that I think we should see a positive progression for him as we carry over into this season. So I'm comfortable with him at his ADP. I think it could rise up a little. And if it rises up a little, I'm not going to be scared of it. I'll lean into it.
I think I'd be willing to lean into it as well. It's funny because, again, like Lamar Jackson is, you know, Twitter's favorite quarterback. You can't, if you say anything negative about Lamar Jackson, you get lumped in with like the lunatics that, you know, called him a running back a few years ago. And I'm definitely not that guy. I'm a Lamar Jackson fan, but like there were some of those misses that, you know, like that get highlighted, like that Zay Flowers left on the field. Some of those were on Lamar Jackson. Maybe not all of them, maybe like half and half, maybe 60-40 onto Zay Flowers. So those two guys need to get some better chemistry going there in the intermediate and downfield area. But I like Rashad Bateman. I'm definitely like a Rashad Bateman truther. I'll keep that candle lit until the day I die, or maybe just the day he retires. I appreciated him roasting somebody in a response to something I tweeted the other day. That was hilarious. So I'm, again, Rashad Bateman guy, but I think Zay Flowers needs to, really for him to take off here, we just need to see him take a leap into that like kind of superstar tier of players. And I think I think he can do it. If he does do it, he's going to outkick this 26 ADP. If he does kind of stay as the same player we saw as a rookie, which was very, very, very good, but still some kinks to be ironed out, and Bateman sort of establishes himself, and those tight ends still sort of kind of dominate the offense, I think he could end up kind of just meeting value at wide receiver 26, maybe not outkicking it so much. Okay, Tara, a couple more here to get through. You want to talk about the Chiefs wide receivers as a whole, and I love this because they're a fascinating group to think about, and most fascinatingly, they're kind of all clumped together there. We've got Rashee Rice, wide receiver 32, 61st overall player off the board. Hollywood Brown, wide receiver 37, 72nd player off the board. Xavier Worthy, wide receiver 42, 87th player off the board. So, Tara, let's just play in this pretend world where Rashee Rice is not going to get suspended. He's probably going to get suspended, but let's live in a pretend world where he's not going to be. I want to pose a question to you like this, and I want to hear why you want to talk about these ADPs. But first, again, pretend world, all these guys play 17 games. Who is the best receiver on this roster in that scenario?
So this one is painful for me because as you are a Rashad Bateman truther, I'm a Marquise Brown truther. So life's been hard.
I play in that playground a little bit myself at times too. So I'm 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
Yes. He's the wide receiver one that could be, but never is. I think it ultimately will be if, no suspension, Rashee Rice is the one that I would take first. He's proven that, he can have that connection, the volume within that offense. And if everything is okay and he is on the field, then I think that is the one who will carry over as the more consistent and better floor kind of guy that you want to rely on in this offense.
I think I agree with, he's going to get the easier targets, but I actually think that, and this is why I think this group is fascinating to highlight here. I'm gonna give you some Hollywood Brown excitement here. I actually think if all three of these guys are on the field together for 17 games, I think Hollywood Brown will be the most productive of the group because I think he's probably the best player of the three. Rashee Rice was super productive last year, and look at the yards per route run, all that stuff. It feels a little bit Christian Watson-y from his rookie season where it's like, yeah, he has nice yards per route run, efficiency stats, stuff like that, but he's not doing it in a true full field wide receiver way. I don't know that Hollywood Brown is like a true full field wide receiver one either, but I think he's a good solid NFL two. And I think the rest of these guys, I'm still trying to figure that out. And I would say, Tara, and again, I'm curious what your thoughts are about where this group can go from an ADP perspective. But for me, I would say that the guy that's least likely to get any steam in this group is the veteran here in Hollywood Brown, because Xavier Worthy is going to rise. We know he's going to kick up during the course of the process. And then we Rashee Rice could go up or down based on the legal situation.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, obviously, when we're looking at the ADP, Rashee Rice, it's going to be, all over the board for a while. And the hype is definitely going to be around the rookie. We see it every time. The rookie gets the hype. And they're just, when people look at Hollywood Brown, they see, a guy who has never, completed a full season in terms of actual production carrying over consistently throughout an entire season. But the thing about Marquise Brown and why I agree with you that I think if everything goes well and he is on the field for a full 17 games, or even give me 14, just give me a decent amount of games from you, and we've got the consistency of a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, I think that he can bring out that true wide receiver one in him, because it's not like an MVS, right, where we've never seen MVS have any sort of wide receiver one upside, but we've factually seen portions of seasons where Marquise Brown has operated as a top five receiver. It's there if somebody can pull it out of him and he can get lucky and stay healthy. So I'm with you. The one that has the true highest upside in this offense is probably Hollywood Brown.
Right. I mean, we've seen 145 target, 1,000-yard season from Marquise Brown back in 2021. Now, some of that was without Lamar Jackson's. They were, they were throwing the ball a lot more than they wanted to in Baltimore. But they're going to throw the ball a lot in Kansas City. They're going to use a lot of motion. I really, at first, I was kind of like, Marquise Brown's not the type of receiver I want to see in Kansas City. Honestly, Xavier Worthy's not really the type of receiver I want to see in Kansas City. I've said this on the pod a lot. I want them to get just a true big body outside receiver that can consistently beat press man coverage. Neither of these guys are that in Marquise Brown, Xavier Worthy. And She writes the biggest guy, but he's definitely not there in terms of ability to consistently win on the outside at all, period, end of story. The best guy, I think, like most consistent player in the intermediate area right now, I would imagine is going to be Marquise Brown. So I've gone from being like not really the guy I wanted to see land there to being like, you know, if he's going to go off the board, Marquise Brown as the wide receiver 37, 72nd overall player, I'm going to take some Marquise Brown this year. Like, you don't have to count on him, right? You don't have to count on him to be a regular contributor for your fantasy team. But again, I think this ADP is going to be very variable throughout the, that's not really a good way to say it, but yeah, it's going to vary a lot throughout the course of the off season. So, all right, Tara, last one here, and this is one of yours. Roman Wilson, Steelers wide receiver. Wide receiver 72 off the board, 166th overall player off the board. Tell me why you wanted to highlight Roman Wilson here.
Oh, Roman Wilson. He is my dark horse candidate for the third most productive rookie receiver this year behind Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. Yeah, I, you know how you feel every season. I don't know about you, but I have, you know, a player that just in my bones, right? A rookie in my bones that I feel like is really going to exceed expectations. And last year it was Tank Dell. This year it is Roman Wilson for me. The landing spot in Pittsburgh, it's very complicated, right? Because there's a lot of things going on. We talked about it when we talked about Najee Harris, all the changes in coordinator and quarterback and, you know, potential quarterback change again as we go throughout the season, which makes things complicated. But when I'm looking at this landing spot, I don't hate it for Roman Wilson because I feel like when you look at him compared to George Pickens, theoretically, it just makes so much sense as a cohesive combination of two lead wide receivers and what they offer within this offense. And this offense will be different, right, under Arthur Smith. So to say that he's going to go into the Deontay Johnson role is a little facetious because that role no longer exists with a new offensive coordinator. But in terms of how he can play off of George Pickens, that's what I truly love. The combination there works so well. Wilson's size and skill set, it's very similar to Deontay Johnson. So when we're looking at how he's going to fit into that offense, we can see George Pickens. You're going to have the big plays, the circus catches. And with Wilson, he can be used across the field in a wide variety of ways. And so when you're looking at this offense, I think he's the one that could end up with the most targets. It's just a matter of whether or not touchdowns are going to come for him in this offense. And he's got the ability to do so. When you're looking at his statistics at Michigan, he was responsible for 50% of the team's passing touchdowns. That's insane. And when you're looking at the overall volume, obviously it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit muddied down because of the Michigan offense not being a very pass heavy offense, being run heavy. But he was such a critical role in that pass game and a dominating force. And I think that level, that skill set that he brings into the Steelers organization makes him someone who can truly actually ascend to being the technical wide receiver one of that offense, even within the first year here. Again, the offense is going to look different, and it's Arthur Smith, so proceed with caution on that one. But when I'm looking at this in Roman Wilson and where he's going in terms of ADP and the actual upside, I just think that he's one of those late round rookies that can really pop and give you league winning upside.
Man, that is super fascinating. Because it, well, number one, it sounds like you're a lot higher on Roman Wilson as a prospect than I was. At the same time, though, when he was drafted by the Steelers, I remember saying when Roman Wilson was a prospect, it's like, yeah, see, I think he's kind of limited in terms of how you can apply him as an NFL player. But I think one of the applications is get him free releases off play action and have him run over routes, like deep over routes. That's exactly what they're going to do in Pittsburgh. You know, it's one of those situations where, again, I'm still not sure how high I am on Roman Wilson. Again, it sounds like you're a lot higher on Roman Wilson than I am, which is good perspective to bring. Because I think that if he does go into that skill set, kind of down where you're I think one way or another, he's going to be like a useful player for the Steelers. He's going to have some weeks here. You know, you want to take him as the 72nd wide receiver off the board in best ball, like absolutely go for it. Cause he should have some weeks here. I don't know how consistent the production is going to be, but if he flies more, if you're listening to this and you think like, I agree with Tara's evaluation here, you look at that damn Steelers depth chart, Tara, it's like, I don't know what else to call it other than random. Okay. Like we've got George Pickens and Calvin Austin's carrying over from last year. They bring in Roman Wilson in the draft. Other than that, it's like Van Jefferson, Quez Watkins, Scotty Miller, Marquez Callaway, Denzel Mims is hanging out here. I've definitely moonlit as a Denzel Mims truther for like a couple of moments there, a couple of nights, you know, maybe after a few too many drinks. Des Fitzpatrick is here on this roster. I mean, again, it is very random. A couple of these guys like Van Jefferson and Scotty Miller have some connection with Arthur Smith, but like Roman Wilson doesn't got to do too much to be just simply better than those guys. And I don't think they're going to play a lot of 11 personnel. That's the key here. Like, Roman Wilson has to be verifiably better than all those players, which, again, not a high bar to clear, because like Pat Freiermuth and Darnell Washington are going to play a lot in this Arthur Smith offense based on what the Falcons were. They were always really high. They're really low on the 11 personnel rates there. So interesting perspective there on Roman Wilson. So it sounds like, again, you're very high on Roman Wilson, which, again, if you take him as the 72nd player off the board and he gives you what Tara brings you, you better come back to Tara and say thank you. That's all I'll say on that. All right, so this has been great, Tara. Really appreciate this was awesome. I mean, so many players covered here in May. That is going to do it for this episode. With the holiday weekend coming up, I'm going to be back on Wednesday, not Tuesday, Wednesday, with an exciting new mini-series on the podcast. Very hyped about that. I think you guys are going to love it. Until then, we're out.